Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Symmetry of Souls' weekly two-hour study of the Urantia Papers. We're seeking to grasp the fifth epical revelation in a synthetic wholeness. Tonight, paper 45, section 6, paragraph 7. It's our arc, our local system of inhabited worlds. Regarding institutionalized religion, we have seen that antagonism to superstitious beliefs habitually leads to repudiation of the entire system of which they form only a part. But dogmas are but temporary forms of that which is permanent. Another quote from a 19th century sociology text trying to call things as they were seen back then. And that sounds kind of familiar about superstition revolts. Anyway, I'm Brad Garner, and I'm so glad that you're here with us live or in our archive at symmetryofsoul.org. With us tonight is the usual crew, Dr. Chris Halverson, Andrea Barnes, and Dave Tucker, and you. Won't you join us in our study of this marvelous revelation by calling up the text as you please and take your virtual seat with us? Good evening, Dr. Chris.
Good evening, Brad. Hello to you, Andrea, and you as well, Dave. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We're going to wrap up our first of the three series in this arc this evening. People who were here last week recall, we left it just on the verge of getting into some of the details of the probationary nursery in our local system. We'll get into that. It's an ever intriguing topic whenever it comes up in various locations in the Revelation. We'll actually get back to it in the third series as well when we get to paper 49. So there's a number of places in the Revelation that bring up these issues. We'll see one of the very key elements that's only located here in this particular presentation. So it's an important key element. You have to synthesize all these various settings on the topic together. So I hope everyone enjoys the show. We'll be talking about a high level of consciousness that we can look forward to called Moda. So everyone attempt to orient yourself as high in consciousness as possible, and we'll see if we can get some truth here.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thanks for that lovely little intro and teeing things up there, Chris. I am now in week three of trying to live my life without the aid of caffeine, so we'll see how high my consciousness can go this evening, too. It's getting slightly better, but... I don't confuse caffeine with spiritual thinking. Yeah, he says to himself now, chastened. Okay. And Andrea, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Brad and Chris and Dave. I'm happy to be here tonight. Looking forward to tonight's study. It's one of my favorite things to consider as a mother. And, to think about the probationary nursery, and I'm looking forward to tonight's study.
Yes, before we commence with that, I will say good evening to Dave and see how he's doing. We'll all get our mics adjusted here and settle in, because I think Dave is going to tell us what we were up to last week, a duty that he often picks up for us, and then we're most grateful for, because it's no small investment of time. How are you, Dave?
Hey, Brad, I'm doing well. Congrats on the old no caffeine job. That's a wise choice. I like that. And hello to Dr. Chris. I've got my truth goggles on today. And hello, Andrea. Always great to hear you, sister. I'm really excited to be here. I got a fun little review and ready to read it over. So the discussion last week picked up after the review with a question regarding male and female opportunities for service after our native sphere. It comes back to how we're using terminology when we're talking about descending sons, ascending sons, and sons of God in general. We're using that son designation to play off of, calling the personal nature of the first source and center the universal father. So pairing up father and son, not because of a bias to males in contrast to females, as we tend to subjectively interpret. We're not talking about males and females at all when we're doing that, despite how it appears on the surface with the language. The fundamental question comes down to why are all humans, male and female, ascending suns? We have to be moving direction like, to be a moving direction like phenomenon. We cannot be a stationary place like phenomenon, or we couldn't ascend. We start off here as male and female, and eventually everyone being very definitively in that directional mode as we ascend. When we take a look at the 4 and 20 counselors, they are giving direction to the rebel worlds, as opposed to, say, holding those places. Why are Verondadex sons? Why are Lenonadex sons? Why are Melchizedex sons? Because they're all individuations of directional phenomena in the cosmos. Males have a biologic tendency to just move on direction-like, and females are much slower to move, if not sort of required to be very place-like. If we fuse, we will become an ascending son of God. The part of each of us that is going to ascend is not the agitant-minded maleness or femaleness, both of which are mortal. The parts of us that are going to ascend is our Maranja self. That's embryonic right now by grace alone. To the degree of which that Maranja self is definitively a reflection of a born-again faither, then that Maranja self is a faith son. Faith sons exist to be very directional, ascending fact until we achieve finality status. The fact that any of us can even have a Maranja self is because we have a personality from the Universal Father that is infinitely transcendent of animal origin maleness or femaleness. We can understand that the personal reflection of our Maranja self is fundamentally transcendent of our biologic maleness and femaleness. When we talk about our nature, we do so relative to the Father. We say it's a son of a Father. For the time being the ascent, a beginning the ascent, back to the source of its creation. When they're talking about various beings, they're talking about various parts in various holistic contexts. When all is said and done, there's a singular mother, the mother for a given super universe, the mother of a local universe, and everyone else in that place are directional parts within that place that she upholds. Be sure to listen to the archives for more intriguing insights into this fundamental foothold we must begin to develop if we're to discern the truth that flows through the revelation. Around the 35-minute mark, a question gets brought up regarding female hormones and how they're constructed in a way that positions the female to be domineered by males. We recognize that it's more than hormonal. It's also a mindal mode that females perforce think within. Worlds that they tell us about that are enlightened life, where males and females are living till 500 years or so, there's going to be at some point where the females on those worlds shift into the son of God mode rather than the temporary downstepped expression of the creative mother spirit that they're literally serving as mothers. And they stand side by side like Adam and Eve that are both in a son-like mode. The female is modified to be more in that sun-like mode, and the male's tempered to be less unbridled and wiser about their male mode. And the two meet in the middle in a directional capacity to administer direction to their societies. About the 44-minute mark, we begin reading paper 45, section 5, The Material Suns. In many regards, when you're at the local system level, there's a very definitive foundation to that level in the local universe. When all is said and done, the permanent citizens of the local system headquarters world are the material sons and daughters, and they direct what goes on there in general. And even in the midst of all these immense preserves, there's a central temple to the material sons. It's important to keep in mind that many of these sons and daughters go two by two, roughly 1,000 inhibited worlds of a local system, and serve as Adam and Eve. and you have an endless stream of them getting modified into being ascending beings with an adjuster and ascending up above the local system level. Fundamentally, you have these two outlets for all the procreation on any local system headquarters. There's a challenge that was laid before even those primitive humans in the very first epical revelation when they could see our material son and daughter, but they couldn't see the planetary prince. They're challenged to very definitively identify with that which cannot be seen. We're all challenged to identify with what we cannot see, even more definitively than to that which we can see. That identification to that which you can't see is the first commandment. The identification to that which you can see, the prince's staff, is the second commandment. And they're setting that up very definitively. Your whole possibility for survival is predicated on a consecration of yourself to that which can't be seen. Our values must be predicated on that which can't be seen, the spiritual, the divine, and the eternal. It cannot be predicated on that which can be seen, the material, the human, the temporal, because if it is, then you don't survive. When we begin to ponder the number of material sons that they give us, it's important to keep in mind that they're not giving us account for that local system. They're giving us account for all of Nebadon. There's 10,000 local systems. Dividing that large number by 10,000 gives us an average of about 16,000 material sons and daughters per local system. When trying to understand the number, you say to yourself, well, they only need about 2,000 to be Adams and Eves, and they need another 2,000 or so on the probationary nursery. So you begin to get the sense that maybe it's not as large of a number as we originally thought. They also tell us that the reproduction is very precisely managed, so it doesn't seem that they create any arbitrary number just because, despite its appearance. There's a handful of occasions in the revelation when we come upon something like this that we can't immediately sort out. But the key is to not take the easy way out by immediately giving in to the temptation to think you should change it or assume it's a typo. Don't take that immediate out. As if somehow your mind is transcendently all understanding. And the revelation needs to be submitted to your consciousness. We're being challenged to humbly let the mystery stand and see if over time we can eventually have it dawn on us by insight. In various places of the revelation, when they talk about self-government, you need to understand it in the context of exactly what they mean in each instance. The highest level, self-government, literally means that each self governs itself without the need of any external outer life governmental scheme. But instead of using the expression self-government, they're speaking of representative government in this context with the material sons. The concept of having a group of people elect representatives, universal suffrage, and then through an indirect means, they basically govern themselves. It's of the utmost importance relative to the material sons and daughters. They tell us they're permitted to experiment with this. They need to develop a very extensive and precise experiential understanding of representative government. The material sons and daughters come to a world to institute representative government, and they have to experientially acquire great wisdom in this regard. They do that through experimenting amongst themselves with representative government. The curious statement they make in this section about sometimes they hope to be granted virtually complete autonomy, this brings up one of the key points that Lucifer is putting forward in paper 53, section 4, paragraph 2. Self-assertion was the battle cry of the Lucifer rebellion, and one of his chief arguments was that if self-government was good and right for the Melchizedeks and other groups, it was equally good for all other orders of intelligence. This is one of the fundamental challenges that Lucifer is putting forward, and it means rebellion to think that. If ever the material sons and daughters move from a sometime they hope to a we deserve this now, that puts them in rebellion. Their minds are disrupted, and they cease to be immortal. It's a death sentence for them to think that. This is why so many of them went into rebellion. the lesson here for all of us is that we must be cautious of our hopes. Someone can play with our hopes and turn them into rebellious desires. Set a guard upon your hopes, lest they lead you astray. Impatience is the fundamental root of that most unfortunate consequence. One way to remind yourself is that hope is not wishful thinking, and it's not based upon actualities. Hope is based upon potentialities, and patience is innate in that recognition. If for a material son and daughter to get ahead of themselves here in representative government, it means instant death, then how problematic is it when humans right now are thinking the same thing? When they're thinking that they're joining the rebellion in truth, and in truth, it's a death sentence. Keep a watchful eye for the Luciferian pipers that are all over this planet right now, because none of them are wearing a bad guy cape and mask. They will appear friendly, kind, and it will feel right to be exhibiting a devotion to them and their cause. But inside of that spiritual candy wrapper is death. This reviewer knows enough to ask, is it me, Lord? Am I wishful thinking? It would be wise to circumvent the way by my own willful desires? Or is it my will that God's will be done? Am I desirous of revolution as opposed to evolution? All that glitters is not gold, brothers and sisters. I, for one, am grateful for this time to be selfish on my native sphere and take the time to master myself without that heavy burden of being responsible for others and their own personal religious experience. And this ends my summary.
All right. Wow, Dave. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was. This week, for some technical reasons, we didn't get a written copy in advance, so I wasn't able to read along, but that was a very, very pleasant experience. It was easy to follow. I had more of the experience of the typical listener, it flows very well. So thank you for putting that together, Dave, and rekindling our memories.
Yeah, that was really excellent, Dave.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Dave. By the way, is it I?
Yeah.
Is it I? And Dave got us spun up there on a lot of our key sort of personally consequential subjects that we touched last week. And as I was saying at the beginning, as we got into section 6, we were exploring those issues of what experiential deficits we have to make up directly as opposed to indirectly, looked at that, that first issue quite a bit of sex associations. And then we were, as I was teasing at the beginning, we were just about to get rolling on a little bit further discussion of that issue of parental relationships. Did anyone have some questions they wanted to, get into up front, or what do you guys think here?
Go ahead, Andrea. You can go first. I'll go after.
Well, I think actually Brad was going to jump in with something right off the bat. Brad, did you have something?
Well, I did. Just kind of a reflection on the way Dave summed up that we must be consecrated to that which we can't see. I've found myself humbled by my lack of imagination. I try to imagine a normal world where there have been beings that don't die around for 500,000 years. They are very visible. They're right there. There's the prince's assistant second in command. There's the Adam and Eve that have been there for some time. It seems to me, my limited imagination, if you saw that, you would have faith. I mean, there's someone who doesn't die, and I can see them. So it's, I find myself, I know that it must be the case because the revelators are explaining that there is still evil on normal worlds, that you must still have faith and trust on normal worlds. You still must be consecrated to that which you can't see. But ironically, I have trouble seeing how that's possible when when these beings are there, because our, the scope of our imagination is limited to the world we're born on. It's not that different than when I was a kid. It was beyond my imagination to imagine my dad traveling to Europe. I just didn't know what that was or how it was possible. It's just inconceivable. But I grew up.
Yeah. I mean, what you're touching upon is, you know, there's a number of parallels. You know, like Jesus talking about how it's, you know, you'll do well with your faith and in troublous times, but you know, watch out when it, you know, gets more smooth sailing for you. I mean, you know, you have a similar thing that you're pointing out there of, you know, if you have visible representatives of the celestial order on your planet, I mean, obviously there's an immediacy to belief.
Right.
But belief is not faith.
I did choose my words carefully, select my words carefully there, yes.
Yes. You know, so, you know, the challenge is still, you know, just as much there when there are visible individuals that you can, you know, believe, quote unquote, believe in, trust to be giving you proper instruction on things, you know, say if they're the scientific uplifters, the Adam and Eve, you know, that they, you know, when they tell you to set up an experiment, it's not going to blow up in your face. but you know, for that fundamental difference between types of belief, right, of which there's a type of belief as a part of faith, but there's something that's not belief at all in faith. It's not just believing God's promises, you know, and it's not even foundationally believing God's promises. It's foundationally following the unseen, his instructions, following the Father's, the unseeable Father's instructions. You could have someone visualize the Lunanandek sun that's serving as planetary prince on your planet, and you could see him. But no one can visualize the Universal Father for you.
Right.
He's unseeable. Right? You know, even with the fanciest power being manipulations. You know, and so it always, you know, always boils down to that. And in terms of, you know, taking it from just a mere religious concept of following the instructions of the unseeable Father, as you expand that outward into a religionist of philosophic attainment, there's another element of reality that's not seeable, and that's truth. And so,
yeah.
See, you're taking the essence, right? The religious, in the religious domain, the essence of unseeableness, and you're expanding it outward into a reality encompassing unseeableness. And then you have to hunger for that unseeableness. You have to hunger for truth.
You know, can I speak to it just for a sec, too? I was having this thought yesterday, I think, when it comes to the Urantia book. I mean, here we've got the authoritative elimination of error, and it's sort of like having, you know, people on the earth. I mean, it's an authority, and yet are we taking it seriously enough? I was thinking, you know, we bemoan that we don't have these celestial beings here as guides, and yet here we've got this book. Are we, is that changing us? Is that doing the trick? You know what I'm saying? So that was my thought that I had yesterday about it.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, you say, oh, boy, I wish I had lived 2,000 years ago and I could have, you know, sat on the ground there and, you know, and listened to Jesus speak. Well, you know, you could have listened for, you know, years and you never would have heard as much as you can hear reading the Urantia book, countless things that Jesus was not allowed to say. Even Jesus fully as the Son of God, you know, post-baptism, right? You know, that the incarnate Michael, you know, was not allowed to say. You have so much more. You know, and to, you know, to take that, that thought that one has is like, oh, I would listen so intentively. You know, if Jesus was talking, you know, can you take that focus to the fifth epical revelation? Right? And hang on every word. You know, knowing that you have to, you know, not just feel the joy you have access to revelation, but that you have to seriously focus in on precisely what it's saying. You know, you would have had both if you were listening to Jesus. You know, so it's a challenge to, you know, to take it seriously. And, you know, and of course, Jesus would also say, okay, yeah, you're listening to me very attentively, but remember, the whole point is for you to see through me, right? I've made myself a lens, right? You know, I don't want you, I'm not opaque so that I'm literally Michael of Nebadon, and you just, your sight stops on me. I've made myself, you know, transparent, and I've made myself a lens so that you can see through me to the Father. I'm trying to make the unseeable seen. Okay, and so he, you know, he would have, you know, and did encourage that. See, again, you know, that to take it. To not stop with the seeable. You know, and you have the same thing with the revelation. We were talking about it recently. Right? I mean, see the truth. It's a revelation of truth, yes, but you can't see truth. All you can see is a bunch of words that if they were, are properly and precisely considered, those words are the logic of that truth. And they become a lens through which you can see effectively the unseeable truth. And so the exact same challenge, you know, is before you as if you were there 2,000 years ago with Jesus. You know, and as I said, he would have delighted in, you know, and giving you descriptions of all these wonderful things in the revelation, right? But he couldn't. But now revelators can. They can, they can tell us about probationary nurseries, for instance, as we'll be studying tonight.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. So I've got a quick question. At the end of your summary, Dave, you were talking about how you were glad that you could be a child here and be pretty much just concerned with yourself and live selfishly, is the way I sort of heard you put it. And that, you know, that just never seems all right. You know, so I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive, right? I mean, well, especially for my nature, it seems like, you know, I want to share the joy of these recognitions that I found, but I recognize that for me to foolishly try to advance another individual's personal progress is Luciferian in nature. That's the self-assertion aspect. And And I'm grateful that I don't have this heavy burden of being responsible for everyone's individual personal religious experience. I'm held responsible to my own. And what I meant by saying I could take this time to be selfish, like on our native sphere, we're not going to have too many more opportunities like this where we could literally just spend working on ourselves. After we make it so far on the mansion worlds, we're going to start being more responsible for more things. But for right now, I know I got one job, and that's to guard against doubt. And that means shielding everyone and everything that could potentially introduce that into me. And so, yes, I'm very selfish with that right now.
Wow, yeah, okay, thanks for explaining that.
Yeah, and to not, to think of, of the word selfish, in its God-given foundational mode, good, right? To not think of it as innately a negative, or even a bad word, okay? Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of heaven, okay? In between the lines of that statement is, forget about everyone else and just focus on yourself.
Huh.
Right? That's the only way that you can find the kingdom of heaven is when you no longer are aware of anyone else. Because in the kingdom, there's only you. As long as you have a consciousness that considers others, you're not in the kingdom.
Really? My goodness.
There is, the only way that you can consider others is with your associating mechanism, the lower domain. In the inner domain, it's just you and the cosmos and your quote-unquote selfish consideration of making yourself reflect the truth of the cosmos like a mirror.
Oh, boy. That's
right?
Neat.
See, it's not about, like Dave is saying, trying to figure out how to get everyone else to be a polished mirror. No, it's just you. All you're concerned about is your potential truth mirror. No one else's.
Yeah.
Right. But, if you achieve that, guess what? Without any additional effort, automatically that achievement pours out fruits, because that achievement is more than it initially seems, where it's just a line that dead ends with you. No, if you achieve it, you would achieve an encirclement. Right? Selfishly through you, quote unquote, flows the cosmos, right, out to the rest of the world to benefit others. But if you don't reflect truth like a mirror, what bounces off that mirror, or the other analogy, what flows through that circuit is not going to be something that benefits its recipients. Because only the cosmos can benefit those recipients, not you.
I think I can see where
in finding yourself selfishly, you lose yourself and actually benefit others.
Say that one more time, Chris, please.
In finding yourself selfishly, you lose yourself and benefit others. Jesus tried to speak about this. It's like, it doesn't seem like that's what would happen, but that's what does happen. Right?
Well, and that procedure, that thing you're describing here, does have to be done in a cosmic frame. I think I can see where this caricature of quote unquote spiritual people often comes from, and particularly some of the more fanciful latter developing quote-unquote spiritual movements, and they all seem incredibly self-obsessed. They're very selfish people. They're very nice people, but it's like they haven't actually reached that point of truly being born again, so those fruits don't truly start pouring out, And so they still seem like they're just totally caught up in themselves. And again, they're quite parodyable. And unfortunately, in these times, you hold them up for ridicule, and people say, well, therefore, religion must be false, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're just by the ish, you're just meaning, you know, characteristic of yourself, right? You're starting with yourself, right? The only real starting point that any of us have. Right? It's the only thing that we're sovereign over. Right? And mm-hmm. So when all is said and done, it's the only real job we have.
That self-control.
Is to take personality management of what's been given to us and us alone, and then manage it well, conformity with the cosmos.
Right.
To become spiritual, and then to become righteous.
Yeah. When you look at the text really carefully, you I would imagine you'd find, I just had paper 111 come to mind, they describe the perverse and self-seeking human will, this characteristic of ugliness. It's as opposed to the God-seeking human will. The problem is the orientation is wrong. There's nothing in that that's saying don't consider the self. And over in paper 5, there's the religion of Jesus is salvation from self. I think that matches with what you're saying here. You know, you do have to sort of start with yourself, but you need transcendence mm-hmm. above that. You need salvation. Yourself will not get you to paradise, but it is where you start.
There has to be
a
self before
faith. Your mortal self, you do have to get the process going of shifting from a personality identification to that mortal adjutant self, right, over to the potentially immortal Maranta self. So, in that sense, right, you want to lose eventually that adjutant mortal self. Yeah, but again, see, the fact that what you're shifting it to isn't some non-self fact. No, it's another self, your Maranta self. And see, and so, that's why there's two senses of selfish, because there's two selves. And it's a question of, whether or not you are selfishly directing that Maranta self to the Father through the cosmos, or is it just a focus on your adjutant self as an end in itself? And when you do that, that's when the word selfish takes on a negative sense, right? Because it's about you, right? And so, see, when you say, choose you this day whom you will serve, right, you can think about why there's two options there, because there's two selves. Choose to consecrate your Maranta self to serving the Father, or choose your adjutant self to serve itself. Choose to get your adjutant self to serve the Father, really. Because, the Father's in eternity, and nothing about your mortal self is in eternity. It can't serve the Father. And when all is said and done, right? I mean, you can get the Maranta self, the potentially immortal self, to serve the Father, and then and then get your adjutant self to serve that Maranta self. But
sense.
The mortal self is right, is mortal. It has no relationship and can't have any relationship to eternity. It's mortal. That's why it's mortal. Because of its absolute absence of eternity-ness. Right? That makes it mortal.
I think I could use this.
A lots of issues like this. I mean, just, you know, taking what you have in the revelation and, you know, and going with it, you know, where it completely transforms all of these old confused religious modalities, even confused interpretations of things that Jesus said.
Yeah. Dave, you had a comment?
Yeah, I could kind of segue into my question here at this point, because, you know, in the review we're talking about the Marantia self basically being an embryonic amount. And it made me question, so how much of this am I going to be able to recall?
Right.
So very little of me is going to be moving onward. How much of me is going to be in my perspective still when we get there?
Yeah, all right. You know, my long-quoted thing about it's sad to record that so few persons take delight in cultivating courageous and independent cosmic thinking. Okay, and that, yeah, that's another way of saying it's sad to record that, you know, most people, you know, if they wake up on the first mansion world, won't remember anything from this life, because it's only the degree to which you take delight in cultivating that there's going to be something that will carry forward memorably. I mean, again, that, you know, it's only when you take delight in cultivating that you're doing something in the domain where the adjuster is making copies of you and having memories. Right? You know, your adjuster is your only means for memories when you wake up. Because, right, you don't get to take your memory, you know, storage mechanism, your material brain with you. And so if you're not taking delight in cultivating, if you're not exercising yourself in the inner life so that there's memories of that volition, then no memories, effectively.
Mm. Kind of a puzzling condition to be in. You definitely wake up, you are yourself, and presumably you have the ability to communicate. You're not a newborn infant, and yet you have no memories. But that's a whole other unfathomable ball of wax. But yes, no memories.
Yeah, I mean, like we've pointed out, I mean, you know, it's sad to record, okay, that you're going to wake up kind of like you were a spirit fuser, right? You know, the positive side is, you know, you weren't dabbling in your inner life volition ignorantly and messing up your soul.
Right. Cheetos and video games, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, it's just the proper embryonic soul that was made at roughly age 6, and it, you know, it's resurrected, repersonalized on the first mansion world, and, you know, you go from there. You know, I mean, it's effectively as if you got encircled in the Holy Spirit and then a tree fell on you 5 minutes later.
Right. I was just thinking something like that.
And, you know, in terms of what wakes up on the first mansion world, see, that's what wakes up. You know, in terms of eternity, there wasn't any life subsequent to age 6 if you haven't taken delight in cultivating. Even though you might have done all kinds of groovy things with your lower domain and, you know, with your body.
That sort of recasts the whole idea of what are you going to do your first 10 days there? Try to put the pieces back together. You're not going to wake up and jump around and be like, where are my parents? Where are my kids? You may be like,
I'm kind
of
amnesia.
So, yeah.
Who am I?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to feel like groundhog.
You'll have amnesia.
Day, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And see, so, you know, all that stuff is, you know, it's not told to us, you know, so that we, you know, have all of our hopes and dreams shattered, right, about an afterlife. Right? It's just, okay, that's what makes the next life logical instead of magical. To think that your mortal self is immortal and that's what goes on, see, that's magical thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of assumed that they were going to be repairing for me on the first couple mansion worlds, you know, going through the old spiritual car wash. But this is making me rethink that.
Yeah, see, so, I mean, it's possible there may not be much to, you know, to deal with. But as I've tried to point out, you know, it's more and more difficult for a human to not be doing things, right, and, you know, in the inner domain, you know, that get copied into your soul. And so, see, the general thing is, you know, even if it's mostly unconscious exercise of will, you end up, you know, willfully transferring your mortal deficits of character, you know, into your soul, and, you know, and need to work on those then when you get to the first and second mansion worlds. You know, it's just, you know, the more that the Supreme evolves our minds, right, see, the less we're in that sheltered bay where, you know, you have all kinds of doings in your outer life here, you know, that just don't even make any ripples, right, in the upper domain. More and more you spiritualize, you take a hold of those things and give them some kind of consequence in the upper domain, which is copied then by the adjuster into your soul. Right, for good or for ill.
Did you say moral deficits or mortal deficits?
Well, we could say both. I don't remember exactly what I was saying there, but
okay.
Yeah, but fundamentally, you know, they are cosmic. They are moral deficits. You know, defects even, right? Like we were talking about last week. You know, and they, you know, so many of them, see, can, I probably said mortal, so many of them, you know, just have to do with how Swiss cheesy our mortal nature is, right? Mm. I mean, we, you know, we have very little biologic uplift, and we have, you know, very unfortunate nurturing going on, and so, you know, it produces, you know, quite the contiguous fabric, right? That we willfully submit to the adjuster to copy, full of all kinds of holes and tears and, you know, loose threads and, right? But we will the adjuster, right? Even if it's unconsciously, to copy that into our soul, and so then we've got to deal with all that on the first and second mansion world.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Here I was thinking I had a great big cannonball into the deep end of the pool just to find out there was no ripples from it.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, historically we can think about, you know, a lot of people that would kind of just wake up sort of a total amnesia, you know, even though they weren't literally a spirit fuser. But one of the reasons why the revelation is here is that's less and less common. I mean, for hundreds of years now, the Supreme has been evolving, and, you know, Adjutant Mind engaging this world is, you know, the fourth Adjutant has, you know, managed to get a collective synchronization, then the fifth Adjutant, then the sixth Adjutant, right in the middle of the 20th century. So, I mean, things are, you know, evolution is beginning to overcome lack of biologic uplift. You know, if we've gotten the biologic uplift, then just about everything of your material life gets spiritualized. Right? It gets uplifted. Okay? Right? See, so, you know, there's a positive side to not getting a lot of uplift, because you're thinking, boy, I'm kind of wishing that maybe that doesn't get spiritualized and put in my soul. It's like, well, you weren't uplifted, so you know, it's too heavy a lift. It doesn't make it there. But see, that's less and less the case now. More and more, right? The very fact that humans are ismizing just about every idea now, see, means that it has soul consequences, that their mentality has soul consequences. Right? That,
thanks to the spirit of truth.
Thanks to that, you know, the adjutants being more, having a more potent impulse, right, to power things up into the upper domain. You are not so animal-like, prosaic anymore, right? And so it's all the more important that you, you recognize that you need to, like Dave was saying in the review, put a watch on your soul, right? Put a watch on that upper domain. Definitely hunger for truth and thirst for righteousness. You know, that this becomes a very definitive part of your life, that you are considering the wellness of your will, as opposed to, you know, that naive child that doesn't even know they have a will, right? You know, and it's okay. They're not really willing anything. They don't have to worry about the wellness of their will. Okay, but we do. We very much do now. All is not well with our will, so much so that there's an emergency revelation given to this planet to tell us just that. I mean, you know, you think you're a religionist, and the revelation tells you you're an unwitting actual secularist. They're telling you all is very not well with your will. You are wicked.
There's work to be done here. Yeah, there's some cleansing to be done.
There's work that needs to be done.
Well,
that's a lot of W's.
No. Anyway.
Well, in the spirit of time management, I might move us on to the reading, but I might do that with a little bit of poetry that I sometimes read when we get on threads like this to try to balance myself back out, because I'm prone to romantic sentiments after hearing things about sheltered bays and all. And so from Stevie Wonder, we all know sometime life's hates and troubles can make you wish you were born in another time and space, but you can bet your life times that and twice its double that God knew exactly where he wanted you to be placed. So we are here and now. We do have the tools. God hasn't given us an impossible challenge. We just need some maturity and some consecration, and this is where we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
he hadn't given you what you needed, it wouldn't be sad to record. Right? It's the sadness is that you're not using those gifts that God gave you.
Okay. Sorry, Dave, you got left out of the questioning. You'll have on Friday now.
I got mine.
Oh,
we're good.
Okay,
oh,
yeah.
Good.
Good.
I just seamlessly merged all the questions together. You couldn't tell that there was, you know, when I left one and went to the other.
But I'll still be there Friday anyway with you, sister. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll Sally for it.
All right. So here we go, a Sally in. Paper 45 of the Urantia book, The Local System Administration, and we are in Section 6, which I did not copy the name of that into my notes. Section 6 is called the Material...
Adamic Training.
No.
Adamic Training of Ascenders.
Thank you. Adamic Training of Ascenders.
And,
goodness. That's what
and the page number.
We're in page 516 of the original single column. And we're starting at paragraph 7 in section 6. This probation nursery of Satania is maintained by certain Marantia personalities on the Finaliter's world, one half of the planet being devoted to this work of child rearing. Here are received and reassembled certain children of surviving mortals, such as those offspring who perished on the evolutionary world before acquiring spiritual status as individuals. The ascension of either of its natural parents ensures that such a mortal child of the realms will be accorded repersonalization on the system finaliter planet and there be permitted to demonstrate by subsequent free will choice whether or not it elects to follow the parental path of mortal ascension. Children here appear as on the nativity world, except for the absence of sex differentiation. There is no reproduction of mortal kind after the life experience on the inhabited worlds.
Okay. An awful lot of our content tonight is actually just in this first paragraph, so let's slowly step through, you know, the multiple points that they make there one at a time. The first thing is kind of a big picture question. Most of the time, right, when they refer to these nurseries, they call them probationary nurseries. They use the adjective, you know, form. But a few times, like here you see them doing it, they just use the noun, you know, this probation nursery. They use the noun to modify the word nursery. Okay, why do they do that? It's to give occasional reminder that, you know, to not just identify the word probation to these nurseries. There's a general fact in play. Every one of us on every nativity sphere is born into a state of probation. It has nothing to do with rebellions, defaults, or anything. Okay? It's just the nature of how we come into existence. We come into existence in a state of probation. What does that mean? We are being probed, right? Probation. We're being probed. We're being tested. We have to prove ourselves. Right? One of the fundamental principles of the Lucifer Manifesto is that that's not the case. Right? The third principle of Lucifer Manifesto is saying, no, you're not being probed, you're not being tested, you don't have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, and, you know, the human tendencies to sync up with that, like with universalism, you know, no, you are being probed, you're being tested, you have to prove yourself. You're born into a state of probation. You know, and you are detained, right? You are on detention spheres to begin with. You know, you are detained in that probationary state until you have proven yourself. And then and only then are you free, you know, to go about the universe at large.
I guess.
Okay, so,
yeah.
So that's why they're doing it. And I, you know, I want to make sure I'm not trying to overplay this. I mean, some of you may know, you know, that they speak of that probation in paper 111, right? And yes, if you hunger for truth and thirst for righteousness, okay, that probationary time is an education, a time of education. Remember, there's another part of the third principle. Lucifer is saying, yeah, you need all that education, okay? So, yes, right, if you hunger for truth and thirst for righteousness, right, then in truth that probationary time is an educational time, okay? But it's still, in fact, a probation, okay? And, you know, if you make it to the first mansion world, it's because you got a probation extension, as it says in paper 112. Right? You didn't get, you know, anything, you know, fancier that you might imagine. No, you got a probation extension. That's all you received in making it, quote unquote, to what you thought was heaven. You know, the first mansion world is just a probation extension.
Oh boy,
you're still
be
being probed. You're still being tested. You still have to prove yourself.
You know, Chris, the way you're describing it here, I think I can understand why doctrines like original sin and being in a fallen world might have endured for as long as they have. They're hitting upon some hint of a truth. I'm hesitating because 20 years ago I would have been stunned to hear myself give daylight to those doctrines. I wanted to just say, no, we're not in a fallen world. Look, the revelators even say it. But the idea that we're born into probation certainly is in line with some of those very traditional, at least Christian, doctrines.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Again, to see that in their own limited philosophic way, all the ancient peoples who were religious, who were genuinely religious, had a sense of truth like this truth.
Yeah.
And they did their best to express it in some conceivable way. You know, and so, throw out the dirty bathwater of ignorant philosophic, consideration, but keep the baby of truth, the core of everything from the religious past.
So, when they reassembled certain children, such as those offspring who perished on the evolutionary route before acquiring spiritual status. Are you going to talk about that?
Yeah, before we get to that, one step at a time here. So, let's keep moving. There's all these different, very juicy bits here in this paragraph. So the next thing, just quickly in passing, before we get to that, is, notice the rest of that, that first sentence. So we're talking about the finalitors world. We're talking about world number one, right, that we read about at the beginning of this paper, right, those transitional culture worlds, which are 10 times the diameter of our planet. Pause for a moment and let that sink in, what they're telling you there. Okay? So, the surface area of the finalitors world is 100 times the surface area of our planet if this planet had no oceans and every part of it was habitable. Right? And see,
wow.
So, a surface area 50 times the surface area of our completely habitable sphere, right? See, is dedicated to just the probation nursery. There are a lot of children there. It takes 50 Earth surfaces.
Wow.
Yeah, that's important to slow down and emphasize that. This is big, a huge part of the mechanics of our local system, or the processes.
Yes.
Goodness.
That next thing that you were wondering about, Andrea, touches upon just why it would be so vast a nursery. You have the received and reassembled. What they receive is the actual material description, the genetics and whatnot that the cherubim bring there, and they literally rebuild the material body based upon those specifications that they've received. When it says reassembled certain children, okay, the word certain means basically any children younger than 16,
mm-hmm.
right, who perished, right, and you get that when you get to talking about the probationary nursery in paper 47, right, they point out that that whole issue of you're still mindily connected to your parents until roughly age 16. They point out that there's very, very few children younger than 16 on the first match in World. It's just about a given that if you're younger than 16, you're going to be reassembled on the probationary nursery. Okay, and so that's the certain thing. You know, it's not all children. It's certain, those certain children. And then, you know, they're pointing out here, you know, the specific point they're saying is before acquiring spiritual status as individuals, you know, that's me, my usual roughly age six thing, right, that I'm always saying, right, at roughly age six when the seventh adjutant finally engages and you're interpreted in the Holy Spirit, you know, and you get a personality, okay, that's when you acquire spiritual status as an individual, okay, and they're pointing out that they're, you have children in probationary nursery, even if they died before, right, they, you know, in our case, right, would have gotten an adjuster. But the key is before, any time before. Right? But just before, that, you know, immediately thinking, well, you know, there's a lot of kids that, you know, especially if the world is, you know, is still in a pretty primitive state, it's tough being a little kid. A lot of kids die of childhood diseases and all kinds of things. I mean, Jesus' brothers died, right? Okay. So you got all those children, okay? But if you go to the probationary nursery section of paper 47, section 2, and look at the beginning of paragraph 1 there. So it's on page 531, so 47.2.1. The incident receiving schools of Satania are situated on the finaliter world, the first of the JRSM transition culture spheres. These infant receiving schools are enterprises devoted to the nurture and training of the children of time. Okay, and here's a parallel thing to what we just read. Here they say, including those who have died on the evolutionary worlds before the acquirement of individual status on the universe records. So not when they get spiritual status at roughly age six, but individual status on the universe records. You go, well, when's that? Well, if you go to paper 37, section 3, paragraph 7, that's where they tell you when you're put on the records. And that paragraph that starts out the worlds of the archangels there on a single column, page 409, says the seventh group of the encircling Salvington world with their associated satellites is assigned to the archangels. Sphere number one and all of its six tributary satellites are occupied by personality record keepers.
Wow.
This enormous corps of recorders busy themselves with keeping straight the record of each mortal of time from the moment of birth up through the universe career until such an individual either leaves Salvington for the super universe regime or is blotted out of recorded existence by the mandates of the Ancients of Days. You're put on the universe records at birth because that's when you have, when you're materially independent and you actually have the potential to have a separate personality eventually identify with that energy system. So,
wow.
So even if they died before birth, okay, and you know, it's like so all of the vicissitudes of what might go on while the child in those first 9 months after conception, right, even if they die then, they're resurrected, they're reassembled.
Even if they're only a couple of weeks old.
Even if they're a single, even if they're, you know, they are killed in the womb as a single-celled human.
Wow.
From the moment of conception on, right, there's something there. There's a child there.
Wow.
Okay, so just a quick question. Like, sometimes I had a miscarriage, and I always assumed that the baby probably wouldn't have been normal, like there was something really wrong, and so, but even something like that?
Well, again, so you see, then when you can bring in the science, right? Once you have the basic framing, it's like, okay, I mean, yeah, you know, if the reason you had a miscarriage is because, you know, what began to form, you know, technically was not human, right? It had some very severe you know, malformed nature, that there was something completely genetically messed up about it, so it wasn't technically a human, right, a pre-human. Okay, that's not, you know, any more than an animal is, you know, reassembled on the probationary nursery. Okay.
Okay.
But if, you know, if the only reason the child perished, no matter how minuscule, you know, is something apart from, you know, its innate nature, you know, which the specifics of which could be sent to the probationary nursery, and they could build a body to those specifics, right? That was, you know, in truth human. Right? I mean, yeah, if it's, you know, any sort of external circumstances, right? Well, then there's something really to assemble.
Huh. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So, again, you know, it could be all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of vicissitudes, right, that might befall that little child. The smaller it is, right, the smaller the vicissitudes have to be, right, for it to be fatal. Right, but they're the father's children, you know, and every child in the probationary nursery is the father's salvaged children, salvaged from the vicissitudes of time. Because they're the father's children, which is not of time. So, he, you know, their fate is not governed by the vicissitudes of time. There's the touch of eternity in that child. Because it's the father's
their
child.
Their fate is governed by their choices, by their free will.
Mm. Yeah, and before they have choices themselves, it's governed by the father's choice. He chose to, for your existence to be possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, these personality recorders, I thought my summary duties were long. This is going to be a heavy.
Yeah. There's a lot of worlds in the local in a local universe. Think about how many children are born every second. In the entire local universe of Nevadon, and they've got to record every one of them. They have to be aware of every one of them's birth and record it.
Wow, that's.
But they're just like we're given everything that we need by God. Those recorders are giving everything that they need by God, and they need different things than we need.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't need their eraser that often.
Yeah, so it's not like Lucille Ball on the assembly line. It's not like that. If anyone is old enough to remember that famous scene.
That's a great episode.
Okay. All right, so that's what's going on there. You know, meanwhile, back to paper 45 right here. Okay, and what I was hinting at, it's that next sentence. About how literal this resurrection on the probationary nursery is relative to the parents. See, this is the only spot in the book where they talk about the probationary nursery where they give this specific: the ascension of either of its natural parents.
Mm-hmm.
Natural parents, right? Ensures that such a mortal child of the realms will be, you know, accorded repersonalization. Okay, yeah, and that's just the literal physics of it. Until roughly age 16, you know, and it's maybe not as rough as it is with six. It's kind of almost precisely age 16. The child has not separated their mindal self. You know, in the mind energy system, in the ubiquitous mind energy system, that mindal self is not separated from the biologic parent's mindal self. Right? You're close enough, you know, because of with those biologic parents, that the adjutant mind attunes to you not that far removed initially from your biologic parents. So until that mind evolves and is actually not overlapping, is actually separate in the mind energy system, you can't be an independent ascender. You're dependent upon them you know, there's no way for your mind to spin up again on the probationary nursery if one of your parents' minds doesn't spin up.
That makes sense, yeah.
You're literally connected to them, right? And there's another spot in the book that, you know, talk about how, you know, they're literally attached to their parents, okay? I mean, literally, you know, mindily.
But you're saying that after the age of 16, rather than being resurrected here on the probationary nursery area, they'd go to the first mansion world.
Yep.
Like if they're 17 or 16 and a half or whatever.
Yeah, or whatever.
They're going to
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, even though it might, you know, be a ways after age six that someone actually gets, you know, an adjuster, you know, they're going to get one before 16. I mean, you know, the tail of that distribution, you know, that has a mean around age six, right, you know, peters down to zero by the time you get to 16.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that's, you know, there are, you know, again, you have to think about issues like, well, what about Abel, as in Cain and Abel? Yeah, okay. See, I mean, but if you just take kind of our normal situation here, right, you know, there will be a soul because there's an adjuster, you know, and so they technically, because they're mindily separate, they can, you know, they can ascend independent of their parents, you know, and they have a soul that to ascend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
And then let's see, what else do we have there? The final stuff, which is always interesting. Okay, when they're reassembled, okay, it's done. They're not reproducing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of in line with, you know, they're fundamentally going to be deficit of a lot of these foundational aspects of a normal mortal's career, and so they are not destined to be inducted into the core of the finality. They're destined to become permanent paradise citizens. They're going to be very fancy individuals as paradise citizens, okay, but they just don't have that foundational bonding back to outside of paradise like a finaliter does, so that the finality can go back out into the universe of universes and do finaliter stuff.
Yeah. So being a parent gives you that perspective that allows that.
Yeah.
Those
foundational things that kind of, you can stand on yourself as a finaliter, but if you don't have that, you have to stand on the aisle. You can't stand on yourself out here.
This just seems to be beyond, another thing beyond my imagination here. What kind of children are these if you're going to go over there and help parent them? It's not a boy or a girl. It's a human. It's a child, but it's not going to be like, well, he gets the fire truck and she gets the little doll, you know, another various stereotypes. Like, there's just going to be something else that's happening there.
That comes up in the next paragraph, too. We'll see here in a second. That's exactly what you're thinking.
Mansion World students who have one or more children in the probationary nursery on the Finaliter's World and who are deficient in essential parental experience may apply for a Melchizedek permit, which will affect their temporary transfer from ascension duties on the Mansion Worlds to the Finaliter World, where they are granted opportunity to function as associate parents to their own and other children. This service of parental ministry may be later accredited on Jerusalem as the fulfillment of one half of the training which such ascenders are required to undergo in the families of the material sons and daughters.
See, it could be at most one half, because in a, you know, an indispensable part of that parental relationship experience is parenting sex-differentiated children.
Oh, really? Is that what it's only half?
See, that's why you can only get at most one half. See?
Oh, huh.
I can buy that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, just think about it. You know, what's the difference between, you know, the two children, right? There is only one difference, right? You know, children here appear as on the nativity world, except, right, there's just only one difference, the sex
right.
differentiation.
So why would you not get full credit for raising children on a probationary nursery? You did here on Earth, so what's the difference? Well, it must be this.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, notice when they're talking about this, you know, getting this permit from the Melchizedek, it says, you know, not only if you have children there, but and who are deficient. Okay, it's only, you know, if you need to make up. Right, the parental relationship experience, right, that you can get this permit to kind of be transferred there for a while. I mean, if you don't need to make up that deficit, you know, you still can visit. Right? There's another spot where they tell you, you know, that you know, every parent can, if they have a child in the probation area, just can visit that child. Okay. Paper 47. Okay. You know, remember how it tells you how touching it is to see, you know, those parents embrace mm-hmm. their children in the probationary nursery, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you can visit, if I recall correctly, it's up to 4 times a year. Okay. But here, you know, it's not just a visit, it's you know, actually, you know, spending some, you know, extended time there.
Right. The probation nursery itself is supervised by 1,000 couples of material sons and daughters, volunteers from the Jerusalem colony of their order. They are immediately assisted by about an equal number of volunteer Midsonite parental groups who stop off here to render this service on their way from the Midsonite world of Satania to the unrevealed destiny on their special worlds of reservation among the Finaliter spheres of Salvingdon.
Yeah, so you can go, you know, read about the Finaliter spheres and, you know, around Salvington, and they mention that fact. But you've got every local system has one Midsonite world, and, you know, and so, you know, notice again, see the Midsoniters, you know, are making up from for a deficit too. And
what is that again?
What was that?
What is their deficit? I forgot.
Well, they have a parental deficit. See, so they're helping out with parenting. You know,
okay.
And you know, and it's kind of innate. I mean, all they could have raised is Midsonite children, which are very different, right? And so they get some experience raising non-Midsonite children. Again, you can go read about the Midsonite worlds and, you know, all that difference. Right? But, but anyway, just, you know, I mean, you know, there's this whole system of, you know, of the cosmos is set up so that it's all interleaved, and, you know, and when all is said and done, everyone has the means to get the required experiential nature to eventually be part of eternity.
That's so amazing.
I'm still perplexed by the number of material sons and daughters, but I don't expect to figure that out in this lifetime. It just seems like you need a lot of them, like just gigaton of them. I don't know.
Well, guess what? You know, when we get into the second paragraph of the next section, you know, we'll have another one we can puzzle over like that.
Oh, terrific. let's see. Well, speaking of that section, let's move on. Dave, you want to take the reading from here?
Yes, certainly. Okay. The probationary nursery itself is supervised by one... Oh, we just did that. Pardon me. 7, the Melchizedek Schools. The Melchizedeks are the directors of that large core of instructors, partially spiritualized will creatures and others, who function so acceptably on Jerusalem as its associated worlds, but especially on the 7 mansion worlds. These are the detention planets, where those mortals who fail to achieve fusion with their indwelling adjusters during their life in the flesh are rehabilitated in transient form to receive further help and to enjoy extended opportunity for continuing their strivings for spiritual attainment. Those very efforts which were prematurely interrupted by death. Or if, for any other reason of hereditary handicap, unfavorable environment, or conspiracy of circumstances, this soul attainment was not completed. No matter what the reason, all who are true of purpose and worthy in spirit find themselves, as themselves, present on the continuing planets, where they must learn to master the essentials of that eternal career, to possess themselves of traits which they could not or did not acquire during the lifetime in the flesh.
Again, you see another way of talking about it. It's like, yeah, okay, you'll get a probation extension if you're true of purpose and worthy in spirit. Otherwise, no. And there's the detention planet, right? And notice here, it's very striking. See, fundamentally, the way the celestials see us, the only way that you're not deemed defective is if you fuse during your life in the flesh. Otherwise, you're defective.
From the top down, that makes sense. I mean, the mansion worlds are there to handle defects and deficiencies. Yeah.
And you go, but remember, you aren't even given a name until you fuse. You're that defective. You're not even worthy of a name. You're so defective.
It's starting to sound old school Christian again, Chris.
Yeah.
got some Jonathan Edwards going vibe tonight.
Here it is. They just keep throwing this in your face, okay? So you can start to get very concerned that you're not going to survive. It's like, okay, just hunger for truth, thirst for righteousness, be patient, be humble, okay, and you'll be fine.
Right.
Thank God we're not on that island of the sea.
And if you're thinking, no, I'm going to do whatever I damn well please, you're not the boss of me, okay, you're not going to survive.
The defects didn't get to go on in I Love Lucy.
There you go.
The brilliant evening stars and their unnamed coordinates frequently serve as teachers in the various educational enterprises of the universe, including those sponsored by the Melchizedeks. Also, do the Trinity teacher sons collaborate, and they impart the touches of paradise perfection to these progressive training schools. But all these activities are not exclusively devoted to the advancement of ascending mortals. Many are equally occupied with the progressive training of the native spirit personalities of Nebadon.
Yeah, not to mention all the other schemes, the other six schemes besides the ascension scheme, right, all that complexity. And speaking of that, all that unrevealed stuff, right, notice here's an example where they felt the need to remind us that there's a group of beings that are similar to the brilliant evening stars that they weren't allowed to talk about. And so you could ask, they do that in a few places in the book when they're talking about the brilliant evening stars. Okay, so you say, well, specifically here, why do they parenthetically remind us of those unnamed coordinates of the brilliant evening stars? It's like, well, okay, we're talking about these vast educational enterprises all throughout the local universe of Nebadon, right? Lots and lots of local systems, right? Okay, and, remind yourself, if you go back again to paper 37, like we did for the archangels, the brilliant evening stars are there too, right? Described in section 2. The Nebadon core of these super angels now numbers 13,641.
Huh.
That's a pretty small number. You're going to feel like there's one in each local system?
Right.
So here's an example where probably the unnamed coordinates are vast in numbers. See? And it's basically them, maybe with some, itinerant, tweaking and oversight by the Brilliant Evening Stars.
Yeah,
I like this rationalization scheme, Chris. Maybe there are unnamed coordinates that are given birth to by the material sons and daughters.
Okay. So this one seems to offer maybe, an immediate way to understand it. But see, it's that kind of, thinking, right? That, it's just like, a very similar unnamed coordinates, right, to the secondary midwares are those lesser angels, right, which they weren't allowed to talk about directly, right, but, mentioned in passing a few times. And again, see, it's a numbers game there, right? You think about the things that some material contactable beings like secondary midwares have to do. It's like, well, there's only a handful of them, right? It's not enough. Yeah, well, there's lots of those lesser angels that can also, pick up a coffee cup if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The numbers are supplied and they're needed, but they, for various reasons, they may not have been allowed to talk about, all those numbers, right, in the Revelation.
The Melchizedek sons conduct upward of 30 different educational centers on Jerusalem. These training schools begin with the College of Self-Evaluation and end with the Schools of Jerusalem Citizenship, wherein the material sons and daughters join with the Melchizedeks and others in their supreme effort to qualify the mortal survivors for the assumption of the high responsibilities of representative government. The entire universe is organized and administrated on the representative plan. Representative government is the divine ideal of self-government among non-perfect beings.
Okay, I'll get to the last part here in a second, but just notice the little predicates there. So, you have self-respect issues, and you have lots of wishful thinking about how if I can just make it to the first mansion world, then there's no issue. No, the first thing they do is they send you to the College of Self-Evaluation.
Uh-oh.
That sounds terrible. Oh, man.
It sounds like the movie Defending Your Life once again. We've gone a month without mentioning that, so there it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
We made a wrong turn at Albuquerque here.
So, you get the first thing is like, well, so let's take a careful look at you, Andrea.
Oh, Yeah, and they say there's no hell. Come on.
You sure you don't want to take Dave first?
Yeah. Andrea, who's Andrea? I never met her.
There's not guilt by association, but there is guilt by identification. So, But anyway, So here again, we talked about representative government, before, and here's where we bring it to that definitive bottom line, directly stating that it's one of the divine ideals that have been disclosed in the fifth epical revelation. Right? There's countless divine ideals that the technical advisors will educate you about during your ascension career. Okay, but we have five definitively given to us in the fifth epical revelation. If people are interested, you can look at that in the Perfecting Horizons library. I give a little outline of them, the divine ideals. It's called Divine Ideals, the Ways of Righteous Living. And we see here again, that this linkage to the material sons and daughters, the material sons and daughters join with the Melchizedeks because this is, this is their bailiwick, right? So the divine ideal of representative government among non-perfect beings. Dave was reminding us in the review, right? If you get to perfect beings, you have kind of literal self-government, right? Each individual governing themselves perfectly, okay? But it's divine ideals. It's, you know, and the scientific uplifters, the materials, his sons and daughters, coming to a world as an Adam and Eve, right? They're the scientific uplifters, and they, this is part of that scientific uplift, the science of government. You know, that scientific specificity of representative government.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So the, you know, this, you know, they pick up, you know, the princes and his staff on every world have given the divine ideals of family life and national life. Right? And then next comes the divine ideal of representative government with the Adam and Eve.
And the master modeled that perfectly for us when he said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." Every 100 years of universe time, each system selects its 10 representatives to sit in the constellation legislature. They are chosen by the Jerusalem Council of 1,000, an elective body charged with the duty of representing the system groups in all such delegated or appointed matters. All representatives or other delegates are selected by the Council of 1,000 electors, and they must be graduates of the highest school of the Melchizedek College of Administration, as also are all of those who constitute this group of 1,000 electors. This school is fostered by the Melchizedeks, latterly assisted by the Finaliters.
So all the mystery kind of that final little comment that, you know, of late here, the Finaliters have gotten involved. You know, when they talk about the Finaliters and how they're kind of this subtle influence, you know, being superimposed on the universe of universes, giving it this subtle, you know, inclination towards, you know, the grand universe being settled in light and life, if not beyond. You know, and how they, you know, the more there's something give that transcendent directioning to, they do. And so, you know, it's an interesting sign that something has gotten to the point where they can step in and give it a subtle little orientation to the transcendent. And then, you know, that's it. I think most people probably remember, you know, when they say 100 years of universe time, you know, there's local universe time, standard time, right? That's, you know, approximately 500 years of our, you know, of our years.
Okay.
Yeah, so about every 500 Urantia years, right, you get this, this group is swapped out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there will be some, you know, influence all the way down to the inhabited worlds of that change.
I guess, yeah, I guess it stands to reason.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in our case, it'll be very, very subtle because of the, you know, we're a rebellion world and whatnot. But still,
yeah.
Right, it, you know, it filters down through the, you know, the resident governor general and that scheme that we do have set up here.
And it always fascinates me that these sorts of ongoing groups of people are doing new things. It seems like everything would have been done already and been thought of and been explored with all these people moving through these stations throughout the millions of years. Just kind of fascinating.
Billions of years, hundreds of billions of years. Yeah.
You know, the other, I was thinking, Andrea, I was thinking the same thing, but the one thought that I've had recently because of what I've been reading, we're very biased toward legislatures that act very frantically, yeah, and for cheap, you know, animal origin, political reasons, and they only look at like very near-term results and outcomes, not the long-term. This would be a legislature on high that is thinking, in truth and is thinking about long-term effects. I wouldn't necessarily think legislation may be the quickest thing to pass there, but when it does, it's going to be what's needed. But there must be a lot of work that's needed to figure that out.
Yeah, and things are changing. Like I was just pointing out that,
yeah.
Notice in this context, they said laterally assisted, right? So of late, things are different, and so you have to re-legislate. It's not unlike, every 10 worlds, everything has changed so fundamentally in the universe of universes, right, that the life carriers have to do a test to kind of reassess, to set their dialable parameters in their formulas, right, to sync them up properly with the state of the Supreme. I mean, every 10
that's
worlds.
That's such a cool thought.
See, so things are changing, right? And it, when they change, it demands a change of the laws of the constellation.
Yeah.
And on and on and on the change goes. Wait till things started getting settled in light and life, like we read in that arc a while back here in Symmetry of Soul. Everything changes, and so you have to redo the whole system, rethink it all.
There are many elective bodies on Jerusalem, and they are voted into authority from time to time by three orders of citizenship: the material sons and daughters, the seraphim and their associates, including midway creatures, and the ascending mortals. To receive nomination for representative honor, a candidate must have gained requisite recognition from the Melchizedek schools of administration.
Yeah, and so two things. Just we didn't mention it when they said it right up front there. About those instructors in the Melchizedek schools, being partially spiritualized will creatures, like ascenders like us, right? That you see here again, how significant a role. Now here it's the ascenders that have gotten all the way to Gerasim, okay, that are Gerasim citizens. But they have a key electoral role. Okay. Those Gerasim ascenders. There's three orders of citizenship, okay, and you have universal suffrage, and notice again, this whole bit, recognition from the Melchizedek schools of administration. The whole point of these Melchizedek schools is, everything in this representative system of the universe of universes, right? The entire universe is organized and administered on the representative plan. Right? Everywhere in that representative plan, it's a meritocracy.
Wait, what does that mean again?
You have merit. You have something that, you have a say in things because of your merit, right?
Uh-huh.
So not our
politics. You are worthy.
Great.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, this immediately touches upon the Luciferian, ultimately, phenomenon on our planet, right, is becoming more and more prevalent. It's people saying, demonizing the concept of meritocracy. See, they're demonizing the universe plan, God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Those are godless ideals, these challenges to meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it speaks to the benighted nature of our current condition in our society.
Yeah.
Andrea, would you like to take over from here?
Sure. Thank you, Dave. Can you guys hear me all right? Suffrage is universal on Jerusalem among these three groups of citizenship, but the vote is differentially cast in accordance with the recognized and duly registered personal possession of Mota, Marantia Wisdom. The vote cast at a Jerusalem election by any one personality has a value ranging from 1 up to 1,000. Jerusalem citizens are thus classified in accordance with their Mota achievement. Ooh, that's neat. Okay.
See, not only meritocracy, but extreme meritocracy.
Right, different levels of franchise and voting.
One
Goodness.
Vote could be worth 1,000, right, of some votes.
Don't they say in that paper on government on a neighboring planet that they they've evolved to a place where they have suffrage
yep.
that's set up a little bit like this? Yeah.
Yeah, see that? This little bit of heaven has come down to earth on that neighboring planet, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, and to see this, it's part of the science of representative government, right, that... the representative plan will fail, right, if you have exaltation of mediocrity.
Yeah, well, that's what we've got going for sure.
Right? You know, if some utterly ignorant, if not, you know, maliciously wicked person has just as much, you know, say electorally as you know, the complete opposite individual.
Yep.
All right, so that, you know, see, they're giving us that a little bit. And we're, you know, we'll talk about Mota a little bit more here after we read the next paragraph. But this is a, you know, spot where they give you this equation of Mota being, you know, being parenthetically Marantia Wisdom. We need to think a little bit more precisely about that. Don't think of that as a complete equivalency. But... I'll just hint that don't think of it as an equivalency of substance. Think of it as an equivalency in essence. And then I'll explain that after the next paragraph.
From time to time, Jerusalem citizens present themselves to the Melchizedek examiners who certify their attainment of Marantia Wisdom. Then they go before the examining corps of the brilliant evening stars, or their designates, who ascertain the degree of spirit insight. Next, they appear in the presence of the 24 counselors and their associates, who pass upon their status of experiential attainment of socialization. These three factors are then carried to the citizenship registrars of representative government, who quickly compute the Mota status and assign suffrage qualifications in accordance therewith. My goodness, that's really something.
So it's complicated. See, but, you know, you can see by the time you get to that last sentence there, that paragraph, well, wait a minute. I mean, it looks like Mota status, you know, encompasses three things, not just the Marantia Wisdom element.
Yeah.
Right, see, so that's what I was hinting at. So, a simple way that you can begin to consider these three different components, right, that the Melchizedek's on the one hand, the brilliant evening stars on the other hand, and the 24 counselors on the third, right, are assessing, is think about your mindful self in the hourglass analogy. And the lower domain is the associating mechanism. See, so
right.
Put that in parallel with the, that's being assessed by the 24 counselors as a socialization. Then your upper domain is the domain of insight, right, that the brilliant evening stars are assessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the foundation for, you know, wisdom is in the neck of the hourglass. So you have the upper domain, the neck, and the lower domain. You have three elements in the picture, right? And the Mota is encompassing the wholeness of it all.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
The measure of symmetry, sort of.
Yeah, and,
right.
And so a way that you can think about this, see, is that, you know, I mean, yes, it is, see, at its nucleus, see, if you compass the whole thing, you know, the nucleus is the neck there. At the nucleus, you know, the essence of it is that Marantia Wisdom. The Marantia Wisdom, just in and of itself, see, is the quality of Mota. Mm. Okay, but, you know, to get the full quantity aspects, it, you know, it, that's twofold, right? The insight quantity and the socialization quantity,
mm-hmm.
the association to the external world of things and of other things and beings, right? Quantity, right? And all together, right? You have that moda, and this is all in the context of the very holistic, you know, less matter based, more actual universe of motion based consciousness in Marantxa mind, right? Hence the word moda, right? Which is a Latin gerund for motion, or kind of literally as a gerund, a moving. Okay? And you know, you have masculine, feminine, neuter gerunds in Latin, right? You have motus, mota, and motum. You know, you can look in the etymology notes there in the Perfecting Horizons library about this. I've got a little thing there about the word moda. You could talk about it like in the threefold actuality with unity sense, that moda is the transcendent harmonization of science, philosophy, and religion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, see, this it's innately dynamic, moving, because the universe is really a universe of motion, not a universe of matter.
Yeah.
And that Marantxa mind motion, it is moda, synchronizes with that universe of motion and knows it more directly and holistically for what it is. Less part-wise, like our consciousness is forced to approach reality.
Why do they use the word quickly there in that last sentence? Who quickly compute the moda status? It's like...
Because it's an insight. It's, you know, it's the quickness
okay.
of self-evidency.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I love how like there's just somebody they can go up to and get a full analysis of themselves, of where they're at, their personal achievement. It's not like we can walk up to a target scanner and find out where we're at right now, you know? This is really awesome.
Yeah. And what's weird to me, I'm still way back at the fact that 17 people from, you know, 24 people from our own world are figuring out suffrage for our entire system. The 4
yeah.
and 20
yeah.
counselors. That seems...
The numbers,
yeah.
Right.
Not
right.
possible.
Again, the significance of Michael selecting a world in this local system for his seventh bestowal. Remember, they had to set up a whole new Melchizedek College because that just changed everything. And
yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rebellion changed everything.
Not to
changed everything. Yep.
So there's something to once again, you know, puff up your ego. If it's been feeling a little deflated this evening in our puritanical musings, now we're on a world where, you know, John the Baptist is 1/24th of 1/3 of the voice of suffrage for 619 worlds.
Yeah,
cool.
But the flip side of that is, yeah, you know, he knows you all too well, and will go, seriously, Brad. How
John,
many
you didn't have video
perishers
games.
Did you wear, Brad?
You don't know how hard
how
it
many
was,
what?
John. We have video games. Yeah.
How many hair shirts did you wear, like John the Baptist in the wilderness? How many honey and locusts did you eat?
I've eaten no locusts. Yeah.
I'm going to be like, John, I couldn't even wear wool. Okay,
yep.
Here we go. Under the supervision of the Melchizedeks, the ascending mortals, especially those who are tardy in their personality unification on the new Marantxa levels, are taken in hand by the material sons and are given intensive training designed to rectify such deficiencies. No ascending mortal leaves the system headquarters for the more extensive and varied socialization career of the constellation until these material sons certify to the achievement of moda personality, an individuality combining the completed mortal existence in experiential association with the the budding Marantxa career, both being duly blended by the spiritual over-control of the thought adjuster, presented by a Melchizedek of temporary assignment on your rancho.
Again, just notice parallel to that threefold in the preceding paragraph, right, where they're mentioning the adjuster is helping to facilitate that nuclear synthesis into a triunity. And personality unification is very much this, triunity is a kind of unification. Right? It's a triunification, this encompassing personality triunification. And here we're back to the whole conversation up front about selfish. See, the whole local system career, right, is culminating in you just, completing this focus on yourself, first and foremost.
Wow.
Getting that self fully, personally individuated. And then and only then do you move on to the whole, consideration of synchronizing yourself with others on the constellation level.
More into the associativity realm.
Yep. Right. It's the individuality on the local system level, the associativity on the constellation level, the unity on the local universe headquarters level. So it's very much, in a positive sense of selfishness. Focus on getting the self in place first. Putting the oxygen mask on yourself first. That's not being selfish when the flight attendant tells you to do that.
Mothers have a difficult.
Right.
Mothers have a difficult time with that, and not just on an airplane. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And you have to overcome that. Right? That there's an Achilles heel there. Right? It has its positives, but all good things taken to extreme become bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And. And so one of the things we have to learn is, it's not that, the universe is saying that you should never consider others. Okay, but Jesus said first things first. Seek first as a self, no others, the kingdom of heaven. Then we'll get to others.
Right.
I never thought that's what seek first the kingdom of heaven meant.
And it's what Lucifer told you. See, the opposite. Lucifer said, no, it's all about the greater good. It's not about the preeminence of the individual. The preeminence of the individual, not the community, like Lucifer said. The preeminence of the individual.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably wouldn't have liked this suffrage thing that they had dialed in.
Right.
He would play against that.
Right. He so explicitly said that that's a bunch of garbage, right? And it's just a means for them to oppress you. He throws out the oppressor victim, Marxist shtick, right?
Falls right in line with our animal origin nature. We lick that stuff up, and wow, there's plenty of food for thought here. We've finished out this paper, and we're going to move on to our next paper next week. We hope that we will see you then. Until then, do your best to follow the way.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. I wonder if this was Mac Aventa Melchizedek, but we'll take that up maybe next week.
All right, yes. Take care, everyone. I hope everyone enjoyed that little excursion into some of these fun topics, and peace be upon you all.